I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rosanna.
And on this podcast, we explore how to take life off autopilot
and relentlessly pursue a life worth living
together.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 12 of the Relentless Pursuit Podcast, Love, Loss, and Charity, an interview with Dana Vavalli from Chesco's Heart.
Yeah, let's tell you a little bit about Chesco's Heart and about Dana and the Vavalli family. Chesco's Heart was founded by John and Dana Vavalli in 2012 when their firstborn son, Francesco, lost his battle with his heart defect. They began this non-for-profit organization to support the research and advancements in treatments for children with heart disease. Chesco's Heart donates 100% of their proceeds to Advocate Children's Hospital's Heart Institute. John and Dana Vavalli are members of Advocate Children's Hospital's President's Society and often visit the patients and their families, bringing them special items during the holidays and other occasions. Chesco's Heart holds their annual fundraiser every fall to raise money and raise awareness for this important cause they hold dear to their heart.
In this episode, you'll hear the story of Francesco Vavalli's life. Although it wasn't long, it was one marked with love, joy, and ultimately loss. You'll hear about how individuals and families process their grief and specifically how this family processes this game changer in their life. You'll also hear about what marriage and parenting look like after loss and not sweating the small things. And lastly, you'll hear about the importance of charity and awareness for nonprofits, especially ones with children for congenital heart defects.
Yeah, we definitely learned a lot from this conversation. We're looking forward to sharing it with all of you. And as always, stick around after for a few of our thoughts and takeaways.
And grab some Kleenex because you're probably going to need them.
Right.
Hi, Dana. Welcome to the Relentless Pursuit Podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you join us today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Dana Vavalli, and I am from Bloomingdale. My husband, John, is from Addison, and we now live in Elgin with two of our children, and we've been here for 11 years, or 11 and a half years, actually, and we started Chesco's Heart in 2012, which I know I'm going to tell you more about, and we have our I was going to ramble on for a second, but totally. Okay. We'll go. You can edit that out. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I'll let you ask the questions.
That's okay.
Sounds good.
Dana, why don't you tell us a little bit about the nonprofit that you guys started?
We started Chesco's Heart in, like I said, 2012. We had our first son, Francesco, in 2010, and we were told about 13 weeks pregnant that something was not right with him and that there was some health concerns. So we went up, I would say about 5 weeks with just unknown and just a lot of tests, a lot of different doctors, and just a lot of questions. They weren't sure. They had a list, and it was basically crossing off the list with each test what the health concern could possibly be. Once we knew it was nothing genetic and nothing that was related to any rare syndrome, they then turned to a fetal echocardiologist. And there they did a fetal echocardiogram, and we got Francesco's diagnosis of hypoplastic left heart syndrome. What that is the rarest heart defect. It affects about one in every 10,000 babies. And it essentially means that the baby is born with half of their heart. In his case, hypoplastic left heart syndrome, meaning the left side was essentially non-existent. So we knew that he was going to have several open heart surgeries and that his path wouldn't quite be the normal path. There'd be a lot of medical intervention, but we saw the light at the end of the tunnel. We never imagined that we would be here talking about this right now. So we had Francesco in October of 2010, and he stayed in the NICU for 6 days, and then he had his first open heart surgery where his heart was just the size of a walnut. And surgery went great. His recovery went great. We were very thankful to be home by Thanksgiving and had our first holiday at home in our new house, new baby. And it was, counting our blessings for sure. He had a second open heart surgery about 3 months old, which was standard for his defect. We knew that was coming. He did really well with that as well. And then we were back home and he had physical therapy and a lot of medicine every day. But he was doing really well considering his diagnosis and the odds that were against him. So we were so incredibly grateful. And we had a really great spring, summer, even fall. He then started showing some signs of exhaustion, and there was still that third open heart surgery that kind of hangs over your head that you know they're going to need with this diagnosis. Typically, he wouldn't have had it until about 2.5 to 3 years old. But his heart was having a difficult time keeping up with him, with his energy, with his day-to-day life. So he was back in the hospital, which they would always call a tune-up, quote unquote. So we were back for what we thought was just another tune-up. And that was December 14th of 2011. And things just kept going more downward than upward. A lot of different problems kept occurring. We would correct one thing and then his heart would show signs of exhaustion from something else. So we weren't really sure what was going to happen. The word heart transplant was brought up to us, which was a big fear of ours all along, because it sounds like a wonderful thing. It seems like a fix, and it's completely not. It's basically exchanging one disease for another and another hardship for another. But that's when we kind of realized that things were really not going well for him. And January 7th, 2012 was when his heart gave up and he passed away. And that's when our whole life changed. And that's when, you know, I guess you could say the beginning of Chesco's heart kind of was put out into the universe.
That is obviously a really hard story to tell. So we appreciate you just kind of being open and honest about that journey. You know, I'm thinking back to about that same time. Our oldest was born about that same time. So even just the mindset of a first-time parent, right? Like as a first-time parent, you're always worried about your kids because you don't know what it's like to be pregnant or to go through that. So, you know, just thinking about that, how hard was that to get that news, you know, at like 13 weeks pregnant that maybe not everything was okay? Like, was that just a really hard time for you guys?
It was, because as you had stated, you're just, you know, we were newly married. We just were over the moon, newly married. We got pregnant right away, which was such a blessing. And then all of a sudden it's like someone just stomps on your dream and tells you something like that. And your life is forever changed.
I can't help but think that that's a type of grief that is, I mean, I can't even imagine. Can you walk us through just the course of like thoughts and feelings that you have, you know, starting in January of 2012, just how, what does that look like? And how do you even respond? I mean, I don't even know what to ask essentially, but what does that journey look like from that time?
Oh, it seems like really fuzzy and so out of body and just a very surreal time of our lives. I think we were just walking through the motions and just very numb. I remember that we stayed by my parents' house for a week or two because I just couldn't imagine walking in the house without him, without Francesco. And my husband felt the same. We actually, when we did get home, it just didn't feel right that we actually put our house on the market for 2 weeks because we wanted to sell it and just go somewhere else. And then 2 weeks later, it was the exact opposite. We realized we could never leave this house because this is where all of our memories are. So we took it off the market and we still live here now. But it was just like no thoughts were right. There was just no consistency in our mood or our thoughts or our actions. And, you know, the lowest of, I can't imagine being any lower than how we felt, you know, without some sort of saving grace waiting for us. You know, we turned to our faith big time. We went to grief counseling and, essentially 3 months later decided to try to get pregnant again. And we did, and we got, blessed with another baby. And January 25th, 1 year later in 2013, we had our daughter, and she was, can't wait to tell her one day how much she saved us, because she's 8 and that would be a little heavy to point her out. But she really saved our lives.
I'm sure that was a hard time probably for your family and your friends, because I'm assuming they were rallying around you to kind of support you guys in the ways that you needed to be supported. Was it hard to let people in at that point? Was it something that the two of you were like struggling with and you were keeping distance from, or did you let people kind of come around you and kind of like lift you up and push you around a little bit and tell you the hard things?
I'm curious, like what was helpful, but also like what not to do as well, you know?
Yeah. We did. I mean, a true, true, like, I can't even put into words how wonderful our friends are and our family and how supportive and present they have all been through our journey. They just were always there. And I think for the most part, always really knew the right things to say or do. I think the hardest thing for us, which we never experienced with any of our close friends or family, but I think the tone that we realized we had to set for people around us was to talk about Francesco, to talk about him, say his name. We have pictures of him in every single room. Our biggest fear and my biggest, I mean, still a really big fear is just that anyone would ever forget about him, you know? And I think for a long time for me as a mom, it was hard to see kids his same age, you know? And even to this day, if I see a 10-year-old boy, I'm going to picture that's the size Francesco would be. And that's what the type of clothes he'd want to wear or the type of, you know, video game he'd want to play. And I don't look at that. I look at that as I like going to that place because I always feel like he's walking beside me. So I never, when we're in church and we're standing with our two children, I always know, like, I always visualize a space where I know he is too. It's a hard feeling to describe. And I know my husband, John, feels the same way, but we do always feel that he is here and he is present. We include him as much as we can in different traditions. And so the kids are always talking about him. Our little guy, Giovanni, he'll tell us, Francesco did that, or Francesco told me that. And I believe him. I feel like he feels this connection to his big brother that I truly believe.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about too. Just, you know, how he is integrated into the family and just how you talk to your children about him. And
yes, we talk about him all the time. I mean, he's the screensaver of our computer, and there's pictures of him all over. And on his birthday, we send balloons to heaven. And, you know, our organization pre-COVID, we not only raise awareness and money, but when we were in the hospital with Francesco, there was a family that came on Christmas and delivered Christmas presents. And John and I turned to each other and said, we are going to do this forever and bring that joy to the kids like they've just brought to our son, still assuming Francesco was coming home with us. We thought we would be doing it with him. And, you know, God had different plans. And we, again, pre-COVID, were doing that with Nadia and Giovanni, and they love that. They had helped me wrap the presents. They would help us get, you know, pick out which present we're going to give to which kid, and Easter baskets. We'd go there with Easter baskets, and that I hope that one day we can get back to doing that, because that is such an important tradition for us and for our kids, and to see and learn more about their brother and where he spent 4 months of his short life, and where he, the doctors and the nurses, so many of them are there, and, you know, part of our extended family, and to see them and our relationship with them that we still have. And that Advocate Children's Hospital is where Francesco was, and we have such a relationship with them. That's where 100% of our proceeds go, is for the Heart Institute for research and advanced treatments. They built a new pediatric cardiac unit. And because of the amount that we've donated since we started our organization, Francesco actually has a room dedicated to him there. And that is something that will forever be there, and for our children to know that is just really special to us, because it was a big part of his life. Mm-hmm. As sad as it is to say, it still makes us happy to be able to go there and to see that.
You know, talking about being at the hospital, so obviously you go through this experience. I mean, the idea of probably like charity, like starting a charity, starting a foundation, giving back to the hospital, bringing Christmas presents to these kids, that was never a part of your plan. You know what I mean? Like, if you rewound the clock 10 years ago, would you think that 12 years later that like, this is what you'd be doing? You'd probably say never in a million years. So to go through that experience and to channel all of that grief into so much good, like, Where did that come from? At what point did you make the decision? Like, you could have been sad and withdrawn. You could have never had kids again. But I mean, you and your husband seem to have like rallied in your relationship with each other and your decisions for your family to build this into something. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What that entailed, what that looked like, and how it's changed you guys?
Yes. So I think it was just our energy that we had. And where are we going to put it? You know, our energy was full of anger and sadness, and we were so busy, especially me. I mean, John was working and I was a stay-at-home mom, and the schedule to take care of Francesco was quite busy. He was completely dependent on me. Obviously he was, you know, 14 and a half months old when he passed. So, not only was he essentially a, you know, baby just turning into a toddler, but he had feedings. Sometimes he had a feeding tube, sometimes he didn't. He had a lot of medicine, trying to get him to nap in between to make sure that he would get his medicine on time when he woke up, physical therapy coming in, speech therapy coming in. And, you know, then of course, just having fun, regular snuggle time with him, you know, too, it was really busy. And then all of a sudden there's nothing. We come home and there's nothing, especially for me to do. You know, John eventually obviously goes back to work. Life does somehow continue on, and I needed an outlet for my energy that I know I would be putting towards Francesco and planning him a birthday party and planning him, you know, a field trip or getting ready to go back to school, or things that I always knew that always things that I always thought that I would be doing with him. I feel like now I bundle it all up into 6 months and plan the fundraiser. So I needed something. I needed something to do for him, specifically for him. For other kids like him, if there was a trick so that no family would ever have to live life without a child, I would
figure out a way to make that happen. Unfortunately, that's not possible, but at least we can help fund this huge birth defect that is the number one birth defect, actually, and one of the lowest funded. And that's the least we could do to try to help these kids live a better, stronger, longer life. And to also try to spare their parents and siblings and loved ones to have to ever live life without them.
Now, I want to talk more about the organization, but I'm also curious just about you and John, just at the time in 2012, and even since then, like how does communication look like when either if you're grieving or you just have some specific needs, I'm just trying to imagine, like, at times I might want to like be together, but at other times I may just like,
be left alone.
Just needs, like, how do you kind of, you know, just communicate and kind of orchestrate that between the two of you?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you gave that example because, I mean, at first, obviously we were very much always together. When he went back to work, that was really hard. My mom would come over a lot, or friends, or, you know, but that was really hard because I almost felt even more alone, but of course he has to go back to work. Right. Fast forward to a couple years after, John was in more of a go, go, go mode, to not sit and cry and be depressed. I wasn't there yet. So I lived life a lot of, what a certain day, okay, December 2nd. Oh, that day we went back to the hospital and we came home on the 3rd. Like, I was very much into time and dates and, you know, reflecting back. And then John would always say, we got to go, we got to move, we got to keep our minds busy. And, you know, and of course, you know, we had our other two children as well. So that kept us more busy too. And I think life made a big turnaround once we had Nadia and then Giovanni, and just kind of invested all that extra love and spread it with them, you know, and probably made me a little bit of a helicopter mom, but I have all this extra love and energy and, you know, and it overflows onto them. But even to this day, I think that now we have found the balance where I have to go, go, go for him, and he has to stop and let's just crash and cry for a night once in a while for me. So I think we have found that right balance. It can't be his way, it can't be my way. We both need each other to keep going. And that's been really helpful, and it's actually helped us just keep up with the days, the weeks, the years, and not have so many, not so many moments where we're on different pages. I think we have found that balance and we've communicated it to one another so that we know, you know, what we need and expect from one another, and not to ever think that he's going to know that I just need that. I need to say it. And I think that took some learning for us as well.
Yeah. That's huge. I mean, I think of plenty of things, right? Just assume Rosanna knows. Yeah. And it's funny, she doesn't, you know, she's pretty good, but yeah, it's that communication that's, I would say makes a lot of sense. I appreciate that.
How does everything that happened with Francesco, how do you think that has changed you as a mom? You said like a helicopter parent a little bit, but in this last year, obviously you've probably had more time with your kids than you probably ever bargained for. Right. And, you know, you've got moms that we're staying at home, or even we're at work, we're at home with your kids, like ready to pull out their hair. Do you feel like you have a different sense of how meaningful it is to have that time with them? Whereas, yes. Like some people are done, but even just listening to your story, like just, you know, reminds me of how precious that time is, but you know, has it meant something special for you?
Yes. Yeah. I definitely am someone that I wake up every morning and I thank God for waking up with my children and my husband. And you will never hear me complain about spending too much time with my kids, or I need a break, or I need this. And not that there's anything wrong with those words, because everyone deserves a break and needs to get out and needs kid-free time. I could live the rest of my life in my house with my kids and I would be happy.
I think that's a good reminder. Even when the days are long and things are hard and we can't go anywhere, even just those simple things of having a house with a family, with people that we love, and that everybody is healthy is so important and is a lot of times missed because we're always rushing to the next thing. So I think that's one of the things in this last year that we've realized too, is sometimes less is more, and the, you know, the time continues on, but you know, it's always nice to pause and step back.
Yeah. So I'm curious about, I would say about a lot, but I wanted to talk about Chesco's heart. And just the process for getting that started. I mean, I think many of us have, you know, intersected with a nonprofit at some point, but very few of us actually begin one. Can you just walk us through some of the conversation about where it went from an idea to a reality?
Yes. Gosh, and I hope I do it justice, because I know I remember it being a lot of work. I remember waiting for a lot of different statuses. Things were pending. Things were backed up to get our name approved. But yeah, I was basically contacting the right people and getting, I wanted to have our first fundraiser in October, because that's Francesco's birthday. So I would say, you know, he passed in January. I would say, I believe our official file date was March 15th. For some reason, that sticks in my mind. But we applied for things well before that. It just, everything was taking a really long time. So I kind of even started planning the fundraiser before we officially got the approval of our name and our tax ID number, because I was determined to make it happen. And if we didn't have everything approved by then, I would even just basically have a unofficial get together of some sort and, you know, write the check of the donation regardless. But everything did come through in the nick of time and we got our name approved. I think maybe around June. And that's when we were officially Chesco's Heart. And the first few years of my fundraiser were more family picnic style. We had it at Randall Oaks Zoo, and I'm not a super techie person, so I wasn't, you know, prepared with the right website and right way to advertise. I didn't have Facebook. Throughout the years, I realized that we need those things, and it's beneficial and it makes things easier. And I found, you know, the right people to help me with that. And then we moved our fundraiser to a different facility indoor, because it was a lot to have to rely on the weather. We got burned a few times, and everyone was always so gracious and still popping in and, you know, making their bids on auctions and buying raffle tickets, but it was raining on them and I felt bad, you know, so it kind of ruins the atmosphere. We try to make it a pleasant evening and, you know, trying to spread awareness, and we always try to provide entertainment for the kids. That's a huge thing to us as well, because it is about the kids. You know, it's about the kids that are born with congenital heart defects. So we want to keep it a very kid focused, something fun, something that the kids want to come to, you know, and that the family, the parents can enjoy as well. So entertaining the kids kind of lets the parents enjoy themselves and also walk around and view the raffles that we have that essentially is what helps us raise all the money. So now we're an indoor event and it works a lot smoother that way.
I like that. I think you've kind of show that, like, where there's a will, there's a way. Like, right, you didn't know how to become a, what is it, 501c3 nonprofit, but you didn't let that stop you, right? Like, right, you go to the website, you figure out the paperwork, you kind of wait for approval. But
sounds,
I love
like
that you,
a lot of paperwork, yeah, and a lot of patience.
I love that you didn't even wait for approval. Like, fine, if this doesn't work out this way, like, we'll have it and we'll just write a check and donate, you know, to another organization. What I think is beautiful about your story is that you didn't just sign on to a different organization or to write a check, but that you created your own. Was that specifically because you wanted to forever honor him in that way, instead of just joining like a congenital heart defect nonprofit that was already established?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly why I wanted to, you know, it might be a mind over matter thing, but I wanted, in order for me to continue on this journey and to fulfill as much of a void as I could in my heart, it had to be for him, in his name, in his honor. And spreading his story, you know, as much as everyone's story is just as important for us, we just, he's our son. So it's our story, you know, and also to Advocate Children's Hospital, we wanted the money to go to them. And they are a phenomenal hospital with world-renowned doctors. And it's not just, I mean, we truly believe that. We don't have our child here, and we're still saying that. So that, I feel like, is a very good indication of how incredible and competent and caring and wonderful the doctors, the nurses, the entire staff at the Advocate Children's Hospital is. So that was a really big one too, is that we wanted to give back fully to that hospital.
Tell us about the room that's there. You said that there's a room there that's named after him. What is the room for? How is it used?
It's a patient room. Okay. They expanded their pediatric cardiac unit from 9 beds to 16 beds. They had a wait list for kids that needed surgery. They needed to expand because they have such a high demand of patients that the families want care from that hospital. So it was a really huge honor when we found out that we would be able to have a room dedicated to him. So we went on, I believe it was in June, the year that they were doing the expansion, which I hope I'm not misspeaking. I believe it would be 2 years this July. And we got to pick out of several different rooms, which one we wanted. And there was one that we were leaning towards. And then there was one around the corner, the very last room, that we almost actually didn't even see. And then we're like, oh, we didn't see that room yet. And it's room 16. It was the last room. And we walked in and I looked up and John looked up and there was a skylight, the only room that had a skylight. And just that particular day, it was just the perfect amount of clouds and sky and sunlight. And it was literally like looking into the heavens. It was, I got chills from head to toe. John did too. Our friend Jackie from Advocate Children's Hospital was with us, and all of our eyes just kind of filled with tears. And we were just like, this is the room. It just seemed perfect.
And what do rooms look like there for kids? Obviously they're there, they're in the hospital, right? They're often having surgeries. Does it look like a standard room, or are they different?
I guess it's kind of what we know, you okay. know, so I've never, our, knock on wood, our other children haven't been hospitalized much for other things. So for us, it's a lot of machines. There's a lot of beeping going on. It's intense. You know, the rooms are intense, but they keep them bright, light in color. Advocate Children's Hospital is known for their cute little animal mascots, and they make it as kid friendly as possible, but it's, you know, it's not just a regular overnight stay of a room. It's post-surgery. It's, these children could be on ECMO in a second and they have to roll in life-saving equipment. So, so they're big and they're busy, the rooms, but they keep it as kid friendly as possible. So.
When he was having surgery there, and obviously he had a few and was in and out a few different times, where did you guys stay? like as parents, what was that like?
Yeah. So there's actually a Ronald McDonald House, literally across a small road. And that is another great organization, by the way. We actually participate in their Running for Hope 5K every June. They're a great organization, but we had a room there. We were very lucky, unlucky, you could call it. We lived far enough and our child was sick enough where we always were kind of on the top of the list because sometimes families do have to wait because it is so busy. John would stay overnight there. I just stayed in the room and I really probably wasn't supposed to. There were, you know, some rules, but I just could not leave Francesco's side. So I would just snuggle up in bed with him and the doctors would come in the middle of the night checking on kids and be like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, oh, you know, just, I was a rule breaker, but I just, you know, it's hard. It's hard to leave your kid. And I never wanted to him to wake up and not see me. And, you know, it was our special snuggle time. And, you know, I never want him to, I was always fearful that he would be scared. I never want him to be scared.
What would your advice be to parents who are dealing with a sick child? I mean, obviously you went through it for a long time. And you know, obviously there are rules, right? All the things that you're supposed to do. What would you say to a parent going through something like that, regardless of how big or little their kid is?
I think the best advice I can give is that you know your child best. You're your child's number one advocate. If you feel like something isn't right, or you just to never feel like you can't speak up. You know, we were really lucky and blessed with such amazing doctors, but even they would say to us, well, how do you think he looks? You know, do you think he's ready to go home this time? Do you feel like he's retaining more fluid this time? Or, you know, just things that a doctor knows so much and we rely on them for so much, especially in the specialty world. But when it comes down to it, you're the one that sees your child every day. You're the one that knows their energy, their baseline energy, their baseline, you know, how much they eat and things like that. And that if you ever don't feel comfortable going home, or if you ever feel like your child needs to be seen, you go with that, you know, and you be your child's advocate no matter what.
I'm curious about the nature of charity. Having a nonprofit for several years now, who are the type of people, I would say, who are maybe more inclined to be, I don't want to say like to be charitable, but, you know, to be responsive to the awareness and to the fundraising that you're doing?
That would be a hard one. I feel like every year it's different. We have our consistent crowd of family and friends every year. And then the word spreads and, you know, one cousin will bring a friend or a friend will bring a friend. So there's always some newcomers every year. I would say our biggest donation or donations, I should say, come from sporting event auctions. I think sports fans tend to really be generous when it comes to, you know, Cubs tickets or Bulls tickets or autographed Hawks pictures. The Chicago Blackhawks donation that my friend always donates actually is usually our biggest seller. And I would say mostly the sports stuff sells a lot, or things for the kids. But, you know, sports, unfortunately, going to a sporting event now is kind of an expensive thing. It's not like when we were younger, you know, parents pay a lot of money for these things on any given day. So then when, you know, they pay a little extra for a donation, I feel like it's cost effective and it's generous. And so I would say if there was a type, I would say it's probably that sports fan that just wants to go to that sporting event and do a good deed at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, Roseanne and I have thought about that a lot this year because, you know, I think like most people, we would say like, oh yeah, like we're good people. And we try to, you know, give and support people in this way and that. But I mean, being honest, like any sort of, you know, like charity or nonprofits was relatively low on our list of things that we actually got to. Until this year where we kind of made it a mutual resolution to be a little bit more engaged with that. So I'm just curious from your end as someone who has like, you know, organized events and raised funds, like are there certain kinds of barriers too that maybe that you see people experience or, you know, just things that kind of get in the way of the good that I think we all would intend on doing to some extent?
I would blame that on myself because I am a little bit more of a shy person. And before Francesco, I was always the one to help people. It's been a very awkward and uncomfortable thing in life for me to accept help and for me to be calling businesses and saying, hey, do you want to donate to my organization? And, you know, it's not my comfortable place. So any barrier we come across, I really think is just me. I have some friends that are like, no, we got to, you know, get out there and do this. I'm like, oh, let's just wait. Like I just, as much as, you know, awareness to me is just as important as the money side of it in a way, because early detection for heart defects is huge in survival. So I like to focus a lot on that too. I'm really uncomfortable with the taking part of it. So auctions and raffles are perfect for me because people get something in return. So yeah, any barrier that we've come across, I would say is just me not being ready yet, you know, because it's just not a really comfortable thing for me to, and it's not even going to me. It's not going to my family, but it's our organization. So in my mind, they're giving to us to support our mission, right? And our mission obviously is giving everything 100% to the hospital, but we're the middleman, you know? So I think that I'm more liable for any barrier at this point. And I hope to get, you know, and I feel like we have gotten better with that. We have gotten, you know, more comfortable with advertising our fundraiser. You know, at first we're like, oh, family and friends, because they're the ones that knew Francesco. And, you know, now it's okay if other people want to support, you know, it took us some time, but I think we've gotten there. And, with COVID, we're a little off schedule with, you know, what our 10-year, plan was for our 10th fundraiser. But when we do get to that number, which now would be about 2 years delayed or a year and a half delayed, we do want to have even a bigger event. And just make it special for that year. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and hopefully gain some more supporters as well. Every year we do gain some supporters. It might be 4, it might be 12, but we do. And we see that as huge progress too.
Well, I like that it starts with something comfortable for you, right? Like your family and your friends, people who knew him, people who watched you go through it, because those people see that and want to get behind it. But now the reason that we reached out to you was because I've seen the waves that's created in the lives of people that I know. And so when I see like people doing good, I know that his birthday was this past year and people were doing 10 acts of kindness for his birthday. And so I'm watching people post and I'm on social media crying because to me, it was a beautiful expression of love and a reminder to be kind to others. And so I think sometimes maybe the barrier is ourselves, because now I've seen something beautiful that's touched me. So I reached out to you. So why wouldn't I want to spread that to, right, like my family and friends and say, hey, you know what, we're donating to this organization or we're going to this event, like, come join us. And I think sometimes we're always waiting for the invitation, but sometimes we have to be the ones to give the invitation to others.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. It was Francesco's 10th birthday, in October. And my friend actually came up with that idea. I was really struggling because I wanted to do something. We couldn't do an event because of COVID. I wanted to do something. I'm like, this is his 10th birthday. I had big plans for this event and I did not feel comfortable doing something that was involving donations because people were losing their jobs and people had big problems, you know, still do. And I couldn't find the in between. What could we do that, you know, we could still raise awareness, we could still celebrate, we could still, you know, honor Francesco and spread the word of Chesco's heart, but not, it includes some sort of, not involve money, you know, because it wasn't about that. It was just about celebrating his birthday. And my friend came up with that idea and I thought it was genius. I thought, oh my gosh, this would be great. It incorporates the number 10, which is something I wanted to do. And it does not involve donations, although we still did get so many donations, which was amazing. And people really enjoyed it. The feedback was really great because it was a time in our lives that kindness was also needed. You know, people's spirits were down, people's, you know, lives were hitting so many hardships. So I think it was a feel good moment, not just for Chesco's heart, but for everyone that participated or saw it on Facebook like you did. And that even was more touching than we ever could have hoped for. So it was really great that that we got to do that and get that feedback. And again, something that we never could have done without Facebook. So it was another way that we realized Facebook is wonderful for, you know, for lots of reasons.
I've always admired the people who say like, let's do this. And then there's, you know, the positive ripples that come from that. I mean, because we saw some of those random acts of kindness and then it gets us thinking like, well, you know, that's pretty cool. Maybe we should do something like that as well. And I think that it really, you know, takes a leader to say like, hey, this is what we're going to do. Come on board with us. And just that positive invitation. I think it doesn't seem hard, but there's also not a lot of people doing those things. So I don't really have a question here. I'm just saying like, I always admire the people who, you know, are willing to be that leader.
Thank you. Yeah. And it made my kids really proud. We made a poster and they, again, when it's something that involves their brother, I can't describe, but it's like they really connect with it. They really feel it. They really feel him. And those moments, I will grab every single one that I can of those.
I think that's probably a testament to what you and John have created in your family. The important part that he is still a part of your lives, very much so that your kids, he is real to your kids because you've allowed him to be there instead of, you know, pushing him aside or burying it, but like letting him live through everything that you're doing and the way you're raising your kids. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. We try, and faith is a huge part of our lives. So it's important, you know, it's always been important to us, but especially having a child, you know, in heaven, it's even, you know, it's such a priority for us to teach our kids.
If people want to learn more about Chesco's heart, if they want to donate, if they want to help raise awareness or learn more about you, where can they go to find that information?
So we have our website, www.chescosheart.org, and that has information about more about our story, about the things that we've done. There's some photos and there is a way to donate on there as well. And if there's any other questions, they can always email me at chescosheart@gmail.com. And those are, yeah, we have Facebook and Instagram as well. We try to post anything that we're doing or any upcoming events, which right now is a little bit of a standstill, but we hope to get back in full swing next February.
Awesome.
Excellent. We'll be looking forward to that. So I'm glad. So anyone who is listening, who is interested in donating, can go straight to the website. But there is a fundraiser to look forward to on the horizon as well. Excellent.
Thank you so much, Dana. We really appreciate you sharing your story, sharing Francesco's story, and advocating for congenital heart defects.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me and allowing us to do so.
Yeah.
Thanks. This is a pleasure to speak with you.
We'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you to Dana for opening up to us and sharing her story, and obviously sharing her grief and just taking the time to teach us throughout that conversation. That was probably one of the heaviest conversations that I've had in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to be vulnerable. So to, you know, just publicly put out there, you know, something that is very real and very raw and very personal can be hard. But just her heart to share so that others could come alongside this conversation and just to hear it and to know and to help others who might be in a similar situation is huge. So thank you so much, Dana.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn from her and from people like her who are vulnerable enough to share their stories and experiences.
You know, there's a lot of takeaways in this episode, but the first thing that really stood out to me was the role of coping and communication, because she talks about how her and her husband were obviously both impacted by this in some similar ways, and then at different times needed some different ways to cope. And so giving each other the space to cope in the way that they needed it, mm-hmm. So that it could be individualized, so they could process it, and communicating that to each other, like saying, I need to be alone. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you want to be held and sometimes you want people to love you and to encourage you and to inspire you. And other times you just want to be left alone. So just being honest with where you're at and what you need.
Yeah, which is impressive because, I mean, you know me, sometimes I have a hard time communicating even mild needs. So, you know, to, you know, be kind of have that with one another to be able to like just express those needs and even determine like what you need. It's a challenge and definitely one that it seems like they've learned to navigate, and we can learn a lot from that.
Yeah. It seems like, I mean, when you're thrust into a situation like that, you're learning for the first time how to navigate it, and there's no right or wrong way, but just being honest with where you are is probably the most important part.
Yeah.
The second thing that really stood out to me with Dana is, after sharing her story and their story about Francesco, deciding to channel their grief into good. Mm-hmm. You know, you can really kind of sit in it for a while and you can let it start to kind of destroy and break down things in your life, but they felt very much called to do good with it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a great reminder that no matter kind of what struggles we're going through in our own lives or in our own families, that like that there are good things that can come from it if we choose to focus on those things and to find them. And mm-hmm. so you can be angry and you can be upset and you know, you can go to dark places, but you have the choice to channel that into something right.
Yeah. And obviously that's a great way to like just honor and do justice to Francesco. And I think, you know, sometimes there are tragedies that happen to those we care about or even to ourselves as well. And maybe that is like the attitude to adopt is like there is, you know, still an opportunity for me to, you know, do honor to myself or to this person that I care about. And it doesn't necessarily have to manifest the same way, but to really find the good that can be channeled through that.
Yeah. Which kind of leads into the next thing that I came up with, which is where there's a will, there's a way. She talks about knowing that, to channel that grief into good, that she wants to start a nonprofit, and talks about how she has no idea what that means, how to start a nonprofit or the process. But the thought in her mind was, I'm going to have this fundraiser. We're going to raise awareness for congenital heart defects. We're going to raise money for Advocate Children's. And, you know, waiting on that 501c3 to come through, she's like, well, we're doing it anyways, regardless if I have the status or not. Like, yeah. If there's a will, there's a way. You're going
to... It's like, well, what do I need to learn about? Oh, there's paperwork involved? Okay, I will figure out how to do that.
Right.
I need to, like, you know, organize a fundraiser and have, you know, just, like, design a website and kind of have all of the steps that go along with everything in there. It's not necessarily an easy or straightforward process, but it's like, all right, but I want to do this, so I will figure out the new stuff along the way.
Well, and she even talked about, I remember her friends telling her, like, you need a Facebook page, you need an Instagram, because that's how people are going to find you and follow her. And her not being like a tech savvy person and that not being in her wheelhouse, but she's like, okay, well, then I'm going to have to learn how to do it. And I'm going to have to try, and it might not be perfect, but where there's a will, there's a way. Like, you can teach yourself and you can get there.
And this is what we want to do.
Yeah. So I really loved that about her. And, you know, she just is so kind mm-hmm. and so sweet. And so just to see her continue to take on and grow is really great. Mm-hmm. And I think the last thing that we can all pull from it, I mean, and it's not the last thing, there's so much in here, is about living an inspired life. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about this past fall, it was Francesco's, what would have been his 10th birthday. And so because of COVID and other things, they couldn't have their fundraiser. And so doing 10 random acts of kindness in honor of her son. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I found out a little bit more about the nonprofit, was because I had friends who were like a part of that circle.
Participating in the random acts of kindness.
And spreading the love and sharing it on Instagram. And I remember seeing it and reading it and crying and feeling inspired to be kind and to do good. And so the people that are on the receiving end of that maybe don't realize that it's all because of this beautiful little life and this beautiful family, but the ripples, you know, continue on for miles,
right,
and across states and boundaries, and just love kind of remains.
Right. And what's interesting too is that like John and Dana may not even necessarily know what kinds of acts of kindness people are doing, but you know, people are inspired by them and then good happens in the world because of them, even if they don't get a chance to hear every story. And I think that's awesome as well, just because you don't have to like lay claim to all of the things that are taking place. You don't have to be aware of them, but just know, like, if we're each doing something like that, like just trying to do our best to share love and to share kindness in the world, and we're kind of mutually inspiring one another to do that, I think that's a great picture that takes shape.
Yeah, that love and kindness beget more love and kindness. And it doesn't matter who starts it or for what purpose, but that we're constantly inspired to do more and to be more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so once again, we want to thank Dana for sharing her story. We'll have links to where you can learn more and potentially donate to their organization. And we thank you guys for joining us again this week and hope you learned as much as we did.
Have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening to today's show. We hope you will use this conversation as a starting point for your own. We hope you're encouraged to think and act more intentionally.
If you want to learn more, you can visit our website, therelentlesspursuitpodcast.com, where you can find notes on today's show, plus additional blog posts, and you can subscribe to our free members list.
Please subscribe, leave a review, and share with your friends.
Facebook and Instagram are two great places to connect with us for daily doses of our quotable quotes, behind the scenes, and real-time photos, videos, and challenges.
Until next time, let us know how you are taking life off autopilot
and relentlessly pursuing what matters.